We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender. And if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island or a large part of it were subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of the old.
Wow. That's one of, I think, the most powerful addresses given, not just at the time, but I think ever. And that, of course, was Winston Churchill, who was rallying the Brits to fight, rallying England as the Nazis were trying to waylay them into submission. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash with you. We are at the top of this first hour. It's the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And what makes this D-Day, it's almost odd to say that it could be more poignant, but more so is that this may be the last D-Day where you actually have D-Day veterans there, where you may actually have those who, part of the greatest generation, who fought to liberate a world, who fought to save the world, there actually on the beach at this observance, because they're old. I mean, it's the 80th anniversary. And I think these 19 and 20 year olds, I mean, goodness, those are, it's the youngest now that were there who are alive today. The ceremony to honor them is ongoing. It's in Normandy now. It started this morning. And various towns throughout northern France have been having their marches to commemorate this. And they're, you know, they have the assemblies where school children applaud and give standing ovations to these amazing heroes. And there's some really amazing footage that has come out of this. And they reenact, obviously at a lot smaller scale, but they reenact the D-Day landing. It was the largest seaborne invasion in the history of the world. And just, one of my favorite, John Boyega actually narrated this most recent World War II. They used a lot of footage from those who were documenting it right there on the front lines, and a lot of it was new and unseen, and it was colorized, and it's just amazing. But one of the veterans who had given an interview, and I think he's since passed, for that documentary, he was in the airborne, and he said that they were flying over the channel as all of the ships and, you know, everything that the Allies were sending as they were crossing the channel, and when the cloud cover finally cleared and they were going over and they saw them. And he said it was unbelievable. One of them said that it looked as though you could cross the channel from Britain to northern France and just use them as a stepping stone, because you use the ships as stepping stones, because there were so many of them in the channel. And the way that they described it, it just sounds completely overwhelming. And I want to dive in. We do this every year, but there's several different things that I want to examine, because I think it's incredibly important to understand the history of this. I also think it's incredibly important to remember the history of this. And some of these are just, they're just amazing stories. I mean, they're just amazing stories. But I want to dive into what we'll start with was the deception that took place. And where were the Germans? The Germans were not anticipating, when they finally saw the ships coming through, they actually thought it was a much smaller scale invasion. They didn't think it was the real thing. They kept thinking it was going to happen at Calais. So welcome again to the program. Dana Lash with you, top of this very first hour. And one of the reasons why we did this, and I'm gonna bring the tugboat back to shore, but one of the reasons why I like doing this and covering all of this is, I want to touch on really quickly, because there's meaning in this. You've heard about the, and yes, we are going to get into Joe Biden being at the ceremony and all of that stuff. Oh my gosh. This was the Great Library of Alexandria, and this was back in 305. It was 305 years before the birth of Christ, and it was when Ptolemy I took control of Egypt, and they had this amazing library. It turned Alexandria into this huge hub, this thriving capital, and Ptolemy wanted Alexandria to be the absolute intellectual center of the world. And it's interesting because he built this huge library that was supposed to house all of the world's antiquity under one roof. And he was a voracious reader, and he sought out knowledge, and he was incredibly aggressive in how he purchased. He would purchase, you know, these manuscripts. He would get stuff from everywhere, from Egypt, from Greece, from India, everywhere. And when ships would come into Alexandria, Ptolemy was so devoted to this, he would demand that they had to submit all of the anything written, any manuscripts, anything that they had on board that was written, so that it could be copied and stored in the library in Alexandria. And it was this huge thing. It was considered one of the wonders of the world, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And so over time, it became one of the largest collections of manuscripts on the planet. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. And there were a lot of scrolls on parchment. You know, parchment tends to break down. The more it's handled, the more it degrades. And the other big thing that they did at this library was they, for the first time, measured the world's circumference. That was an original work that they did at this library. And they just had so many Aristotle's works, because Aristotle had, I think, something, I think it was estimated to be like 200 plus pieces that he had written during his lifetime. And there's only like a small number that survived today. They were housed there at the library in Alexandria. And one of the things to keep in mind, what I mentioned about the parchment degrading, is that it wasn't enough just to copy those and store them once. You had to have a commitment. You had to be dedicated to saving the knowledge. You had to be dedicated to recopying those before the parchment broke down and it was lost forever. And this was something that, you know, Ptolemy, that he was just so aggressive in getting all of this. And they would recopy things while he was alive. I mean, they got plays from Sophocles. They got all of these ancient works that could have told us so much about. We only know like a tip of the iceberg about a lot of ancient culture because so much was lost in the Library of Alexandria. Now, no one actually knows. Well, there are theories as to what happened to this library. Maybe it was Caesar. Maybe it was, you know, raided during a civil war, you know, in 48. They don't know. But it ended up, it was completely lost. There was a huge fire and it was lost. But that wasn't what contributed, according to historians, the loss of this knowledge in the first place. What contributed to it was that it wasn't being recopied. After Ptolemy's death, his heirs and those who came after him, they were not as committed to knowledge and the collection of knowledge as he was. And so the degradation of that began long before the fire took out that library in Alexandria. They just weren't recopying it. And so much was lost. Everything was lost. And it was the apathy and that killed it. And it was forgetting it and abandoning that commitment, which made all of that knowledge lost in history. And I bring up this amazing story about the Great Library in Alexandria and where a lot of classical culture disappeared because there wasn't a commitment to keep it and preserve it. There wasn't a commitment to remember. I bring this up because with the 80th anniversary of D-Day and so many of those veterans that are there on the cliffs right now in Normandy and who are watching these amazing reenactments and who are being honored for their service and honored for their bravery and their courage, what happens to all of this when they're gone? There was video of an amazing veteran who couldn't stand. He was in a wheelchair, but he was determined to stand. And he had a little help. That's what Juan is showing. It was caught just real quickly, just in passing. It was caught by the television cameras. He was doing everything he could to stand. There was another photo I saw of a 90-something-year-old veteran who was there at one of the American cemeteries. And he was standing by the grave of his 19-year-old twin brother who died in combat in World War II, died on D-Day. Just amazing. What happens when these veterans go? And I wrote a piece about this over at Substack that if you are a subscriber, you would have gotten this morning. I wrote about this over, what happens when these veterans go? You know, there are so many American cemeteries over there that tell the story, but they don't tell the full story. There's so much more. I mean, what happens if someone goes to, you know, the American cemetery in Luxembourg and they go and see, and I think Juan's preparing a picture of that, they go and see another American cemetery and at the very head is General Patton's grave, still there watching over his soldiers all these years later. It tells a story, but does it tell the full story of the bravery, of the inventiveness, of the cooperation that went into making this day as historic as it is? And that's the million-dollar question. Who's going to keep these memories alive? I mean, look at all of the knowledge that was lost in the Great Library of Alexandria because there wasn't a commitment to keeping it alive. There wasn't a commitment to remembering. There wasn't that dedication. And it's sad to think this is the last probably big observance for World War II vets for D-Day. And I wrote last night, or actually this morning, it came out this morning, and I said, I've never missed my grandparents more than I do now in this age, and I've never grieved for the dwindling down of an entire generation more than I have for the greatest one. Because sometimes I wonder if they served such a grand and fruitful purpose, they put all other endeavors from later generations to shame. And then I realize why I mourn their loss when I take inventory of this absolute hellscape in which we call a society today. And the growing instability here and around the world. So take heart, because we were born for such a time as this. I love this quote from Patton. And I always share Patton's speech to the troops. Patton was, you either loved him or you hated him. But I think you needed to love him. Because he was flashy, old blood and guts. He was flashy. And he was a leader. And he knew what it took to inspire courage and fire in the hearts of men who were facing insurmountable odds. He was able to keep men mobilized all the way from Africa, going into Sicily, going through Italy, even after he was removed from duty because he was slapping cowards that he had to pull from the front line. People who were fatigued and who were giving up, and he was like, no, and he needed to set an example for all of his men who loved him for it. Even after he was pulled and sent on this, you know, PR campaign, before he took control of one of the deceptive units, which we're going to talk about, and then they gave him control of Third Army, he knew what it took, and he had the ability to inspire men going from one continent to another. That's not easy to do. But he had said, quote, the brave men will breed more brave men, kill off the GD cowards, and we'll have a nation of brave men. I love that quote. I love all of the stuff he said, actually. We have a lot to touch on today, because it's the 80th anniversary of D-Day, and I think it's important to remember for the story that I gave you about the Great Library. You don't want things to be burned in apathy and forgotten. So we're also going to talk about Biden at the ceremony. I think he tried to go to the bathroom when he was in front of everyone there. I don't exactly know. We're going to break it down Zapruder style and maybe kind of explore what happened. Also, it's day four of Hunter Biden's gun trial. We're going to talk about that. His wife has got to sit there as baby mama and ex-girlfriend and all of this stuff is up there. And as Lorraine noted, the first lady is in Normandy trying to save Biden. So she's got two messes to deal with right now. So we're going to get into all of that. We're also going to get into some culture, the true equality of General Patton. You're not going to want to miss that one. We got a lot to hit as we roll towards, already we're at the bottom of the hour. Well, that's not fair. It's not fair. And our partners, Gold Co. Precious Metals. Look, you're going to need some gold and silver, particularly if the economy keeps going down the path it's going. You need some protection. You need to protect and diversify your savings with precious metals like gold and silver before it's too late. And there are thousands of concerned Americans, myself included. We don't want to jeopardize what we've worked so hard for. We don't want to watch the government keep putting savings at risk with national debt and everything else. So right now, you can get a free 2024 Wealth Protection Guide from Gold Co. It's going to arm you with everything you need to know about how precious metals can help you in the face of inflation, war, exploding national debt, so much more. And you could be eligible for a 10% instant match and bonus silver while supplies last. So I wouldn't sleep on that. And Gold Co. thousands of five-star reviews, perfect rating from the Better Business Bureau. And they've helped people like you and me place over $2.5 billion in gold and silver. And they want to make sure that you understand the economy of how it all works, how gold IRAs work, and they want to make it easy for you to get the benefit of owning actual physical gold or silver. It's a very important part of your retirement and savings. No pressure. Visit DanaLikesGold.com. Get your free gold kit from Gold Co. Learn how to get $10,000 in bonus silver and get your complimentary wealth protection kit. Visit DanaLikesGold.com.
The Democrats are counting on your economic ignorance so they can get reelected. The left wants you to think that oil companies and grocery stores are ripping Americans off. Meanwhile, they just want to get back into office to keep printing trillions of more dollars.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up on this 80th observance, 80th anniversary of D-Day, which we're covering, we got some fun history stuff playing for you. Just in time for the election, the World Health Organization has warned of a new strain of bird flu. It's jumping to the humans, Kane. And it has the potential for high public health impact. You guys better give up all your rights again. You guys better stay home, shut down your businesses, and everybody stay home from school.
Another threatened election here? That's
weird. Totally weird. I'm not talking about the skanky one. Cucumbers have been linked to a salmonella outbreak that's spread to 25 states. Wash your cucumbers. I meant Lego thefts, really. Southern California, there, police are trying to figure out why people are stealing Legos. Probably because they're so expensive now. They said that suspects have stolen more than $100,000 in Lego merchandise from six Bricks and Minifigs stores. The Lego reseller, which stocks them, has more than 100 outlets across the U.S. So six figures in Legos that you're stealing. They're plastic bricks, you know. I mean, there's other things to steal, but don't steal. There is a roller skating circus bear who dropped the act to maul a trainer in front of shocked kids during a performance. If you thought that it took place in Russia, you're right. It did. It absolutely did. Stick with us. So there's a company that I just started using called Ammo Squared, and Ammo Squared helps you stay stocked up on ammunition, like automatically. It's a truly automated system. You set it and you forget it. It's an ammo purchasing program, and you can pick whatever caliber you want. You can set your budget, you can select your shipping, and that's it. And the cool thing is that it builds up, your ammunition builds up over time, and it's stored in this climate-controlled warehouse, and it sends it automatically when you want it, when you have it selected to send. And ammunition is a hard asset. I mean, it's something that's tangible. I think we all remember the uncertainty, like back in 2019, 2020, when there were certain calibers that were kind of hard to find. And we ended up calling, we were calling some of our retail friends and saying, when do you get a shipment of this? Can we get some? Can we lay claim to some when it comes in? And in times of uncertainty and inflation, the value of all this stuff only goes up. So Ammo Squared is there to help smooth out the rough spots of ammunition availability. It's like an ammo 401k or something like that. You set it up. You have ammo for that rainy day when store shelves are empty and ammo's hard to find. So you can learn more and you can sign up today at AmmoSquared.com and ensure that you're prepared for whatever may come your way. That's AmmoSquared.com.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
The trail of the Third Army and the 19th Tactical Air Command and the 8th Air Force is marked by more than 40,000 white crosses, 40,000 dead Americans.
General George S. Patton, God love him. In one of his addresses after he came back to the United States, they had a huge celebration. They had a huge parade, you know, obviously, for everybody coming back. And when Patton came back, he was such a great speaker. That was part of his speech, and we have more of that. Welcome back to the program, bottom of this first hour. I've got a lot of stuff to get into, including Biden at the 80th anniversary ceremony over there. Not good. And that's coming up here in just moments. And then we're also going to get into the latest day four of the Hunter Biden trial. And I got some culture stuff for you as well to dive into. But I wanted to talk real quick. I think history is incredibly important. And every year we talk about this especially if we're on air on the 80th, on the anniversary of D-Day, because I think it's so incredibly important to understand what was done. And I think that we as a society should be committed to remembering it, because you want to remember the great things that your greatest amongst you have done. And I love getting into the weird history of World War II. I'm a huge World War II buff. I love getting into the history of it. We had grandparents that served. My grandfather didn't enter the war until the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And he totally lied about his age. He was like 16 or 17. We think he was 16. They lied about everything back then. Their age, their hair color, everything. And he and his brother went and enlisted. They didn't get drafted. They volunteered. And our other grandparents were in Europe, and they came not on D-Day, but in the days like right after D-Day. And so it's amazing that our family was on both sides of the planet. I think everybody has family that fought in World War II. And it's just all of my great uncles fought. All of my great uncles were in World War II. My great grandmother was an actual riveter. Like there's old photos of her in a factory doing steel work, and that she, I think it was, and can you remember the big factory that used to be North St. Louis? She moved up from the Ozarks, my great grandmother, and they had the ladies stay in these like, not condos, I'm trying to, almost like dorms basically, and to work in the factories. And she brought her two children up with her. One of them was my grandmother, while her husband was in the war. It's amazing the history of this. And that she went to work with all the other women. Everybody pitched in. Everybody pitched in. Patton is one of my favorite figures in history, because he is they don't make him like him anymore. We need a Patton now. We do. We need a Patton now. Instead, we got Millie. I think one of the last that we got that's similar to him is maybe a Devil Dog, old Devil Dog. Maybe that's it. We need another old Blood and Guts. It's always old something, isn't it? But Patton got in trouble. I don't know if y'all knew this. I get so mad on his behalf. He got in trouble. He became a public relations difficulty. So you still had those sensitivities even back then. It was during his campaign going into Sicily, his brilliant maneuvers going into Sicily, that he slapped a couple guys, right? I mean, you know, on a couple of different occasions, soldiers that were on the front lines that he thought were acting a little cowardly, he slapped them. Slappity slap. And he got in trouble. They removed him from command. And so he didn't get to go on up through Italy. He had to go all around Europe and do these press events. And he was speaking, and it actually ended up working out in the Allies' favor, because he was lifting morale. And it also was freaking the Germans out, because they had no idea everywhere he was. They thought something was going to happen there. And he was all over. He was in Malta. He was in Corsica. He was in Egypt. And it was also to boost the deception plan that the Allies were coming up with. And he was brought into England, and it was in January of 1944. Patton was brought into England, and his subordinate at the time, Lieutenant General Omar Bradley, was running the show at that point. He had to command. Patton was told he had to command a fictional outfit, and this fictional outfit was the 1st U.S. Army Group, FUSAG, FUSAG. It was a fictional army group, and it was designed to help deceive, to get ready in advance for invasion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so he had to command it, and then, you know, he'd get the U.S. Third Army, as he was mentioning in his speech, when it was ready to deploy, they were ready to go into France, if he fulfilled this and took command of this fictional mission, because they needed the Germans to believe that this fictional group was real. And if Patton was at the helm of it, oh my gosh, they absolutely were going to believe it. And that's absolutely what happened. The Germans would say that at the time the Nazis were like, oh, the Allies are so unimaginative. But they fell like Wile E. Coyote for everything that we put out for them. They took the bait every single time. When they were getting ready, when they were trying to trick them out as to where they were going to invade, they were building up forces and getting ready, making things look like they were going to go into Calais. And they had inflatable tanks even then. And it was funny, because there's stories of these farmers out in rural Britain. And they said all of a sudden, you know, they went to bed, they woke up in the morning to go milk the cows, and I'll be damned, there's all these inflatable tanks and everything right there. And they had no idea where they came from. They even were given implements to make tire tracks in the pasture, so that when the Luftwaffe went overhead to, you know, do some reconnaissance, they could see this. It was so amazing, the level of subterfuge in which they engaged. And so they created this impression that our numbers were actually way bigger than they were, and that we were going to go in different places than we actually did. And it was the Quicksilver illusion, and they needed to make it really, 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 and it was part of helping Operation Overlord, which was the invasion of northern France. They had to make it really, really believable. And it was amazing. They even had they captured a bunch of German spies and they turned them into double agents. And it was, the stories of this are just, it's the stuff that movies are made of. But it's real, and we did it. You know, I mean, it's real. Yeah, they saw these units. They saw when they had their forces, German forces, fly overhead, and they thought, oh my gosh, it's, you know, they wanted to make, they did everything possible to throw suspicions of the Germans. And that's when you had the Ghost Army, which is one of the most amazing things. I'm sure you're familiar with the Ghost Army. In fact, just with this was last year's Associated Press, the Ghost Army members who deceived Nazis with battlefield ruses in World War II were given the Congressional Gold Medal. Actually, this was in March 21st of this year. The Ghost Army absolutely changed the course of war. It was amazing. And they had some of the best patches as well. They used art to deceive. You know, Ian Fleming, who wrote James Bond, was all part of this. He was a part of a lot of secretive missions, but it was like a James Bond plot, the stuff that Ian Fleming and others came up with. There were, you had George Eastman, Kodak Company, who was involved in this, Bill Blass. Operation Viersen was their last biggest op that was credited with saving tons of lives. And they literally made stuff up. They would have audio deception. They had, in the northern France, they were a mobile deception unit. And they tricked the Germans six ways to Sunday. And it's one of the reasons that Patton got folks across the Rhine, because it was the Ghost Army that was tricking them. Just amazing, the history of this. And they weren't allowed to talk about it. In fact, it only came out like in the 80s. And it was an article, I think it was a Smithsonian magazine article, where it finally came out. It was like 85 or 86 when it was finally discovered. But they had Operation Viersen. Their missions for the Ghost Army included D-Day. And that was their, where they were trying to deceive where they were going to be coming in at. That was part of their fictional command unit. And then they had Operation Viersen. That was in March in 1945. They told the Germans believed that the Allies were going to cross 10 miles away from where they actually crossed. And it totally worked. And it managed it, it. I mean, it saved lives. I mean, it saved lives. There were only 82 officers and barely over 1,000 men in this unit. And they made the Germans think that they were two like battalions. That's genius. That is like, that's genius. That's amazing. Yeah. April 1985. That's when the first story came out. Nobody knew. And when the families of these men found out, they were like, this is absolutely amazing that this happened. They had radio deceptions. They had visual, sonic, everything. They would place stuff in the bushes nearby where German soldiers were that made them think that there were marches happening, or that there was, you know, there were tanks rolling, you know, a certain distance away. It was so great. They had audio engineers, amazing artists, storytellers. It was when culture and military worked in such beautiful harmony together. Nothing like it has, I think, been seen since. It's just amazing. And that's the Ghost Army. And then after Patton successfully helped with some of these deception missions, he got the Third Army, and then the rest is history. Just fascinating stuff. I got to talk to you about what Biden did today, guys. We're at that point. We're going to get into the Russian stuff, but can we play the video where he tried to sit down in front of everybody? This is audio soundbite 10. This is the D-Day commemorations this morning. Now, he's there with Emmanuel Macron, Brigitte Macron, that's the president, first lady of France. He's there with Dr. Jill Biden.
Distinguished guests, please welcome
he's squatting.
The Honorable Lloyd J. Austin.
What is he doing? He's trying to sit down, or he's taking a deuce. It could be either. We really don't know. What does he do? I don't know what he's doing. Now, the other part, let's get ready, audio somebody 11. So at this event, Macron and Biden, they're supposed to stay and greet the veterans. This is what, when American presidents go over, this is what they do. They stay and they greet all of the veterans. Biden was escorted out by Jill, like immediately after that. And Macron you see in the full video, is very confused. He has no idea what's happening. The aides are confused even. They're kind of running after him. Macron was like, well, I guess. And they left Macron there to greet the veterans by himself. Guys, the whole nation is sitting here going, there's something wrong. Democrats are even going, there's something wrong. There's the Wall Street Journal piece yesterday that came out where you have Democrats and Republicans saying that there's something wrong, while Biden aides are saying, we have to discredit this article because they included a couple of Republicans in it. There is something wrong. This is not right. I don't believe that Joe Biden will last. If he's reelected in November, he's not going to make it through a second. I'm just saying, because you can look at his health and see the way he's acting. He's not going to make it through another 4 years. There's no way in hell. No way. He will not make it through another term. That's probably why he gets so hostile when members of the press ask him about this. He literally asked one reporter the other day if he was dropped on his head, and then he threatened to fight another after they asked him about this. Guys, this is not right. You know it's not right. Everybody has somebody in their family, an elderly person, where they saw either a physical or mental decline. He's got both. It is not normal. He does not look healthy. He does not look aware. He has difficulty getting around. He can't finish sentences. He doesn't even remember his own policies or history. This is even worse than what Chamberlain ever was. My gosh. This is not good. I mean, I look at this stuff and it's kind of scary. He's not running the country. I know you know this. I fully believe, and I'm not saying this as like a talking point for radio, I don't believe that Joe Biden's making decisions about the country. He is not the acting president of the United States. So who is? We have a lot more on the way. We got Days of These United States coming up. We also have the developing story. Apparently, American weapons are being used inside of Russia. We're going to discuss this. And the true equality for Alphabet Month of George Patton. We're going to talk about that as well. Our partners over at Hillsdale College, an actual educational institution where they do some learning. They do the learning at the Hillsdale. It's a smart place for smart people. No, for real. Hillsdale is a small Christian classical liberal arts college in southern Michigan. I just got to say, I've run into an extraordinary amount of people who've gone to Hillsdale. All these people that I keep running into that have these, that are very, very smart, and they're working in analysis and strategy, they all went to Hillsdale. Hillsdale's churning them out, and I think they're like the only one. You got to save America, Hillsdale, and you can help actually Hillsdale do that. I'm not kidding. That's their pursuit. They want to defend liberty through education, and that's been their hallmark since their founding in 1844. So one of the ways they're doing that is they're asking for your input. You can take a survey on presidential selection at DanaForHillsdaleFOR.com. Now, why am I asking that? Because the Marxist left has been pushing to just abolish the Electoral College. They want direct democracy, which is mob rule. It's literally a bunch of wolves in one sheep voting on what to have for dinner. That's it. That's what they want, though. 18 states have signed on to overhaul how presidents are elected. Hillsdale desperately needs your views on this because they want to understand the views of mainstream Americans on this critical issue so they can factor that into their work in defending liberty. So you can access this at Dana4FORHillsdale.com. Start your national survey on presidential selection today. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Oh my God! You ran away! Yes. Yeah, I'm okay.
He's getting attacked by birds. This news reporter in the middle of a live shot, meaning the camera's about to go live. So it's sending a live feed of where she is to the control room. And she is waiting for them to throw it to her. And as that's happening, a bird starts dive bombing her. And it's hysterical. Those are really, when you do outdoor live shots, there's a certain level of nervousness that goes along with that. I remember when I was the token conservative, this was some years ago, back in 2012. And We were outside. CNN had, and it was at the Republican debate, primary debate. And CNN had constructed this little stage, and it was in Florida at their fairground somewhere in Florida. And we were there, and it was on this nice little stage, and there was like a stream, like a little like creek or something nearby. And right as, I mean, it was, they just gave us the 2-minute warning, meaning make sure last looks, all that stuff, sit there, make sure your mics, everything's nice and straight, you know, you're all where you need to be. And as they did it, there was like a bird fight in the trees behind us. I don't know if there was like a hawk or what had happened. And this was like late summer. So the birds were still really active. And I don't know what the heck was going on. Cause you're not, we couldn't really turn around and look. Cause we, at that point when you're given the warning, you're, you know, you got to stay there and get ready to go. It was so loud. I could not, we couldn't hear anything in our monitor. We couldn't hear anything in our ear monitor. Our in-ear piece, like I have on right now. We couldn't hear anything because it was so loud behind us. It was crazy. So they actually had to wait until they figured out what was going on because it was so loud. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what that headline would have been like? We're going to throw it now. And it was Wolf Blitzer, who was the anchor, who was hosting it. They're like, we're going to throw it to Wolf. And they're at the Republican primary debate getting ready. Can you just imagine? It was so loud. And it did finally, it ended up stopping, but we had to wait for a few minutes. But it was hysterical. And I just kept thinking, please do not come over here because it was an open top. And they only had stuff to deflect and diffuse the light. So the birds could have flown overhead. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this, like, are we going to get attacked by birds? It's like a Hitchcock thing. All right, we have more on the way. It's the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We're also going to touch the day 4 of Hunter Biden's gun trial. It's getting a little crazy, getting a little dramatic. And Biden, weapons in Russia, Biden at the 80th ceremony, the 80th anniversary ceremony in France. I mean, it's pretty weird. There's a ton of stuff, culture to get into, all of it. Stick with us. We have a packed show, second hour, moments away. You don't need a disaster to prepare for major emergencies. I mean, if you, power outages, honestly, like storms and all this stuff, it seems like kind of a normal part of life anymore. But here's the thing. You want to be prepared always, no matter if it's a natural disaster or, heaven forbid, a political one or supply chain. You never know. You want peace of mind. This is like, it's like insurance, really. And to avoid all of the stress of that, all of the stress of planning when it's too late, be prepared now. And this is where ReadyWise comes in. You can use promo code Dana20 and get 20% off any regularly priced item at ReadyWise.com. And you want to make sure that you have it if you need it. Not you need it, you don't have it. And with ReadyWise, all foods made with high quality U.S. ingredients, freeze dried, dehydrated, no refrigeration required, easy to prepare, just add water, 25-year shelf life. The time to prepare is now. Visit ReadyWise.com. Use code Dana20 and save 20% off of any regularly priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, code Dana20.
We stand on a lonely, windswept point on the northern shore of France. But 40 years ago at this moment, the air was dense with smoke and the cries of men, and the air was filled with the crack of rifle fire and the roar of cannon. Here in Normandy, the rescue began. At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944.
62 of the Rangers who scaled the cliffs there at Pointe aux Hope, now back 40 years later to the scene of their heroic action.
These are the boys of Pointe aux Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs.
It was a very moving experience. They were what General Marshall called our secret weapon, the best damn kids in the world. Where do we find them? Where do we find such men? And the answer came almost as quickly as I'd asked the question. Where we've always found them in this country. On the farms, the shops, the stores, and the offices. They just are the product of the freest society the world has ever known.
Someday, Liz, I'll go back, said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion and first assault wave to hit Omaha Beach. Liza Zanetta Hen began her story by quoting her father, who promised that he would return to Normandy. She ended with a promise to her father, who died 8 years ago of cancer. I'm going there, Dad. And I'll see the beaches and the barricades and the monuments. I'll see the graves, and I'll put flowers there just like you wanted to do. I'll feel all the things you made me feel through your stories and your eyes. I'll never forget what you went through, Dad, nor will I let anyone else.
Just an unbelievable audio there from Reagan, Ronald Reagan, President Ronald Reagan, who was himself honoring what happened on D-Day. Now we're at the 80th anniversary of it. It's amazing. 80 years, the greatest generation. Welcome back to the program. We're at the top of this second hour. And as we always do whenever the anniversary falls on a day that we are on air, we talk about D-Day. We talk about some of the historical aspects maybe that you were unaware of, some of the amazing stories. And then, of course, we have to talk about the news of the day as well, which we will do. Do you know that it was almost, first off, D-Day was disastrous, was up against disastrous odds, insurmountable odds. The landings, and it's hard to say it, but it's the reality. Part of it was to be a war of attrition. To be wave after wave after wave after wave after wave of troops coming in to overwhelm the Germans that were there on the cliffs. And it almost was a disaster because of the weather. This is an interesting story. There was a short gap. They had a storm on June 5th, and there was, looked like it was going to be maybe a storm coming after. And there was just a partial break in the cloud cover that allowed for this to happen. Eisenhower was forced to delay it by 24 hours because of the storm. It was going to hit the channel on June 5th. They had a break off of the coast of Ireland's County Mayo. And the story of this is interesting. Maureen Flavin, she was called Sweeney. She ended up being honored by our own government because her weather report saved thousands of lives. She passed away last year. They had 1,200 warships getting ready to go. Everything was planned for June 5th. Every single aspect of the invasion required a certain weather condition to be successful. You didn't want crazy stormy water there in the channel. You didn't want cloud cover that prevented our aerial support from protecting what was happening on the ground. They needed calm seas. Calm seas. They needed a low tide. You had 4,000. It was over 4,000. I can't remember the exact number. Over 4,000 landing craft. Crazy, crazy. The largest seaborne invasion in the history of this planet. So you had the deception that we talked about last hour that made the Germans think, and not just on D-Day, but even after, that saved lives. But you had this Maureen Flavin, and she lived in Ireland. And the story of her, she was a postmistress or a deputy postmistress. And she was watching overnight. She had the overnight shift on June 3rd. And it was her 21st birthday, Maureen Flavin. And she was doing some of the readings of the weather, and she saw that what was going on with the waves and the force six winds, she said, that were capable of whipping up 11-foot high waves. It was coming in from the Atlantic. She saw what was hitting her, where she was, her location in County Mayo. And so she was sharing details. She ended up reporting what she was experiencing. She was peppered with calls about her work from a woman with an English accent. She was asked to repeat her readings. Her readings were passed unbeknownst to her to London. She was relaying the information to Irish Meteorological Services as well in Dublin. And she had been married to the local lighthouse keeper, Ted Sweeney. She rode to Blacksod Bay's lighthouse. They were looking at other meteorological instruments, relaying this to the Irish government. And what why they were doing that is because whatever was happening in County Mayo, that was an indication of what was going to be going into the channel. In about anywhere from, you know, 24 to 48 hours. And so she saved lives because she said, wait, wait, wait. This is some real bad weather coming in June 5th, guys. Wait, wait, wait. This is what's happening right now to County Mayo. Wait, 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 wait. And she also was in contact with them, according to the historians and the documents and everything at the time. There was an unreleased note from Eisenhower that was talking about the landings. They were waiting for a break in the weather to get a satisfactory foothold, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, it was a very high-risk, high-reward play here. And they knew that even though the weather wasn't totally perfect on June 6th, it was partial cloud cover. There was a break in the storms, a 24-hour break. That was going to give them enough time. So just that, I mean, just a little window of time. 21-year-old postmistress who just was there and was tasked with watching what was coming in. This is unbelievable. Just every part, every person played a role. And I want to talk real quick, and we're going to get into the news of the day. I want to talk about the actual true equality of Patton, because we, here it's Alphabet Month. D-Day gets a day. And what the men and even the women did on D-Day. What was done on D-Day, that is fighting for rights. That is a struggle. That is true inspiration. Everything else, all this other stuff with the alphabet stuff is nonsense. It's noise. If one of my favorite, and again, I share it every year because I think it's honestly the best speech ever. I can't read all of it on air. Patton noted that he did not speak. He said it. How did he say? It's not polite for tea rooms, maybe. I think is what is how he put it. And even for the movie on his life, they sanitized it. But he spoke how the troops needed to. He spoke what they needed to hear. And I love, I have the full speech. It's, I read it, but it's very long. I have the full speech. But I love this aspect of it. Because he was talking about all of the people involved in this, the teamwork. He said, every single man in this army, this is from his speech, plays a vital role. Don't ever let up. Don't think that your job is unimportant. Every man, Patton said, has a job to do and he must do it. Every man is a vital link in the great chain. What if every truck driver suddenly decided he didn't like the whine of those shells overhead, turned yellow and jumped headlong into a ditch? He says that cowardly, well, redacted, could say, hell, they won't miss me, just one man in thousands. But what if every man thought that way? Where in the hell would we be now? Where would our country, our loved ones, our homes, even the world be like? He says, no, damn it, Americans don't think like that. Every man does his job. Every man serves the whole. He talked about the ordnance men and supplying the guns and the machinery, the quartermaster bringing up food and clothes, because he goes, where we're going, there isn't a hell of a lot to steal. He said, every last man on KP has a job to do, even the one who heats our water to keep us from getting the GI runs. But that's not what he said. And he said this. He goes, every man must not only think of himself, but also of his buddy fighting beside him. He said, we don't want yellow cowards in this army. He said that they should be killed off like flies. And if not, they'll go back home after the war, the cowards, and breed more cowards. And the brave men will breed more brave men. But he talked about every link in the chain pulling together. He goes, and then that makes the chain unbreakable. That's equality. What Patton talked about, that was true equality. None of this sex flag and military men in heels, in uniform, nonsense. This is equality of purpose. It's equality of battle. It is a quality of teamwork. Real, actual equality. True equality. Lasting equality. If it didn't strengthen the whole, then it's a distraction. And distractions, well, those are the enemy's tricks. And that was Patton's equality. You were there for the unifying mission of purpose. You are there because you are fighting an evil that you need others to help you defeat. Every single person plays a role. We've lost that. We've lost it a lot in politics. No one thinks like that. Everybody wants to go out for the golden ring because they don't appreciate all of the other roles enough. We don't have enough encouragers. That's a very powerful, I think, calling to have, is to be an encourager. That's just as important as being the person who gets the golden ring. And Patton recognized all of this. He recognized every bit of it. We don't have Pattons anymore. It's depressing. Maybe we do. Maybe they're coming. What does it say? Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Well, we're not in good times right now. So what type of man are you raising? And that includes women. Just amazing. Now, coming up, going into this, you had a health entity that actually was telling the public that men can get ovarian cancer. Kane, have you checked your ovaries lately?
Yeah.
No. We're going to talk about reactions to this. We're also going to talk about one of the things that Biden mentioned. Oh, yeah, the use of U.S. weapons in Russia. It's getting more unstable by the day. We're going to talk about all of this coming up. Patriot Mobile is the only Christian conservative cell phone service that is out there. And if you're fed up with supporting companies that don't share your values and actually have your money work against you with their political donations, then you need to switch today, like now, to Patriot Mobile, because that's not what they do. First off, yes, you get the best reliable nationwide coverage on all the major networks, so you're going to get the same great service, but without funding the left, because they don't spend and make political donations that work against you at the ballot box. You can also get a plan that's tailor-made for whatever you, your family, or your business needs. They work with families of all sizes, singles, dinks. You guys know the dinks, the dual income, no kids? I love that term. Businesses of all sizes. You can keep your phone, keep your number, upgrade, the choice is yours, and they can find that perfect plan for your needs. 100% U.S.-based customer service team. It makes switching easy, so you're also helping to maintain and create U.S.-based jobs. Visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Promo code Dana gets you free activation, so make the switch today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Never been happier to not be in New York, because now flying venomous spiders the size of a human hand. No. Oh, gosh. No. They're going to fly, literally fly into New York. It's called, what is it, the Yoru spider? It's an invasive species that, hey, guess where it originated?
Where?
China. Now they're sending us spiders. We had a virus, balloons, and now spiders.
Damn.
Jeez, it's
market.
Like the stupid plagues. They can fly up to 100 miles by turning their webs into makeshift parasails, like Kamas. And they're venomous, but scientists insist that the Yoru spider's venom is weak, guys, and the skin's not strong enough to break the skin of humans or pets. Did you test this yourselves?
Right.
You tested it yourselves? They're known to cannibalize the brown-colored male mates. Oh, great. So they're feminists. Great. We got a bunch of bitchy spiders. They're going to be flying in the wind. And I don't like brightly colored things that are insects, because it means bad. It means no. Like, run, no. I would much rather battle like a monster, a big one, than like a little brightly colored insect. Because they can get in your brains and eat your brain up. I don't know. I just can't deal with it. Let's got to set New York on fire now, guys. Let's see. Dr. Pat Sajak is leaving. I don't think that you can have anybody replace Pat Sajak and Vanna White. They should not be allowed to leave. And if they have to leave, then just don't. Just the show needs to be over. Then that's it. A 15-year-old is going to make a PGA Tour debut after the success on Corn Ferry Tour. A 15-year-old in the PGA. I mentioned this one yesterday, but we ran out of time. This is in Palo Alto. The elderly donkey called Perry that inspired Eddie Murphy's character in Shrek was given a $10,000 government grant to help pay for his care. Like, nobody could adopt him.
Right.
I mean, I would take a donkey. I'd totally adopt a donkey to have. You know, they're jerks, but, you know, so am I. So it works out. We'd get along. All right, we have a lot more on the way. We got culture. We got apparently Biden now talking about the use of weapons, American weapons in Russia. Stick with us. Our partners over at Kel-Tec. It's a great Florida-based company that a lot of people try to rip off because they're just not as smart and they're not as innovative with their designs and they're just not as good at designing guns like Kel-Tec. I'm just going to say it. George Kellgren immigrated from Sweden, went to beautiful Florida, and launched a boomstick company. And very innovative. They create pistols, rifles, shotguns, all kinds of stuff, gear, accessories, all the good, you know, all that. They got the new Gen 3 sub 2K. I have the Gen 2. Light, foldable, effective. You don't have to detach your optics. You just fold it in half and get up and go. It's nice. And it's an awesome 9mm carbine. They've done a couple of other upgrades in addition to not having to detach the optic. You've got light and action for easy racking, ambidextrous bolt hold open. They also reconfigured some of the triggers, so it's a light and 5-pound pull, all for improved accuracy, translating to improved manipulation as well. Quality made right here in the U.S. of A. See everything Kel-Tec has to offer at KelTecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, there's a really powerful parallel, too, between what we're commemorating today and what we're doing now. Back then, it wasn't just the United States. Here in Normandy, 12 countries came together. 160,000 men coming to this beach, coming to start the final fight that ultimately, 11 months later, led to victory in World War II. In Ukraine, we have more than 50 countries standing up, standing together, making sure that Ukraine has what it needs to defend itself and to push back this aggression. And that's the power of our alliances. And that's the biggest difference maker we have in the world. Our adversaries, our competitors, they don't have the same kind of voluntary alliances. Yeah, sometimes they coerce countries into helping them, or maybe they pay them off. Here, we have country after country that volunteers to stand together in defense of principles that we share and no need defending. We're seeing that in Ukraine. We saw that 80 years ago here in Normandy.
That's ridiculous. Antony Blinken actually trying to compare Ukraine to Normandy, which is so historically illiterate and offensive, it almost provokes me to violence. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lash, with you at the bottom of this second hour. Can you imagine? That's such a heinous comparison. Such a heinous comparison. I cringe. And I've seen, he's not the only person who's been doing that. I don't know if you saw this. This was Hillary Clinton 5 hours ago said, quote, 80 years ago today, thousands of brave Americans fought to protect democracy on the shores of Normandy. This November, all we have to do is vote. Wow. Trump is not Hitler. And Republicans aren't Nazis. And you tried to cheat and lost. She attempted in 2016, she attempted to undo everything that these World War II heroes fought for by partnering with Fusion GPS to launder discredited oppo in the press and then merch it out into surveillance warrants on enemies through FISA. And if my World War II grandparents, the World War II vets, grandparents were alive today, they'd slam this. They'd slam her sentiment. They'd slam such a comparison. That's shameful. When people throw around the accomplishments and the bravery and courage of these greatest generation, these veterans, as a comparison, as some way to substantiate their own behavior, that's the mark of a person who's never done anything. That's just asinine. It's one of the most offensive things I think I've ever heard. You have Biden here as well. This is audio soundbite 8. He does the same thing Antony Blinken does. Listen to this.
Because if we do, Ukraine will be subjugated and will not end there. Ukraine's neighbors will be threatened. All of Europe will be threatened. And make no mistake, the autocrats of the world are watching closely to see what happens in Ukraine, to see if we let this illegal aggression go unchecked. We cannot let that happen. To surrender to bullies to bow down to dictators is simply unthinkable.
I'm floored that he is in Normandy lecturing everybody, these veterans, about Ukraine, about a foreign land dispute that has nothing to do, not even remotely comparable to what happened in World War II. You absolute incoherent, historically illiterate asshole. Oh my gosh. I muted it. But he's, you know it. That's so disrespectful. They wanted, Democrats wanted so bad with his stupid remarks to have a Reagan moment. They wanted him to have his own little Reagan moment, right? And it's embarrassing. How are you standing up there comparing D-Day to Ukraine? It's a foreign land dispute based on a lot of historical disputes between these areas, those two, that geographical location that goes back a century. It's not spreading. It's contained. The only thing that's, I mean, if you want me to argue it, the only thing that actually has expanded was NATO. But I'm just saying, it's not even remotely the same. In fact, you can't have it both ways. Let me pull this article up. I was actually not going to get this until Friday, but I'm doing it now. There was an article that I read the other day, and I was actually going to be bringing it up with Stephen Yates. No one has paid attention. We talked about it a little bit on the program here. There's been a seismic shift in global power that nobody's talking about. Russia, notes Neil Barnett, has become China's vassal state. Russia's not the threat. China is. They had Gazprom that signed a $309 billion contract, the biggest in its history. Gazprom's a Russian entity. They signed this to supply gas to China. They built a huge pipeline, Power of Siberia, that can withstand temperatures negative 62 Celsius. And it went all through 1,800 miles through the Siberian wilderness all the way to China. They opened it several years ago. Huge celebration. Now they're wanting to do the Power of Siberia 2, an even longer pipeline. And even though you've had three of Russia's Nord Stream pipelines, you've had some explosions in that since, you know, it was in, 2022. Moscow has been trying to find a way to put where to sell its gas, its dirty gas, since the United States, under the last administration, was trying to free our, which is weird. You're going to have NATO as a hedge of defense against Russia, but yet you're going to rely on them for all of your energy. That's wild. So the United States, with our energy resources, we're trying to alleviate that dependency upon those allied nations on Russia for that. And so Gazprom, they posted their first loss in more than 20 years. Their share price plunged. And then now they're trying to establish these more transactions, more of this energy infrastructure with China. But China's trying to drive down the price of Russian gas. So they're playing hardball with them. They've been dragging these negotiations out for forever. And Moscow wants better terms, so they haven't agreed. But it looks like they're probably going to be forced to. And China has an economy that's like 800-something% larger than that of Russia's. They have more people. They have the entire upper hand in this situation. And they have been friendly, but Russia's the second banana to China. Completely. This has been a huge shift in global power, which is another reason why I completely discount these arguments of people like Antony Blinken, whose audio we played coming into the segment, and what Joe Biden just said there talking about Russia. China doesn't give a rat's backside about Ukraine. Only Russia does. Actually, only Russia cares about the Donbas region and Crimea and Sevastopol. China doesn't. Russia does. But they're a second banana to China. Their economy is in tatters. They're not the superpower. They're not the super bad guy power anymore. They're not the mini boss. And so you've been seeing how all of this has been playing out. This threat that they keep talking about, the Democrats and neocons keep talking about, it's not Russia, it's China. And only so much insofar as China can use Russia, but they're more interested in Hong Kong. They're more interested in Taiwan. They have eyes elsewhere. They want to dominate the South Seas. This has been a very, it's interesting. So to hear him, to hear these people, they notice they didn't mention China. Blinken didn't talk about China. Biden didn't mention China in his address. I mean, first off, you're at the Normandy event. You're at the 80th anniversary. You're celebrating the veterans that are there. That is not the time to make a speech trying to extol your money laundering operation in Ukraine. It is not the time to make a highly politicized speech about financing a foreign war in which Americans have zero interest. And doing it in front of these veterans and wasting the precious seconds that they have on Earth by doing that. That was so wholly inappropriate and grotesque. But I'm not surprised because it is I'd call him the white trash president, but that's an insult to actual white trash. He just looked like a fool. And those veterans there, I don't know if you saw the expression on some of their faces. I'm telling you. You know, they're watching the guy who heads up an administration that has as a deputy of Health and Human Services, a man who wears lipstick and heels to work and says he's a she, but wants to lecture you about health, mental or otherwise. A guy who had a disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, from Kabul. Lecturing these veterans here. I mean, it is truly amazing. And so I just, it's just so, oh my gosh, my jaw's on the floor with that. Just so inappropriate. Audio soundbite 7. He said this too, talking about democracy is at risk. Listen.
Now the question for us is, in our hour of trial, will we do ours? We're living in a time when democracy is more at risk across the world than any point since the end of World War II, since these beaches were stormed in 1944. Now we have to ask ourselves, will we stand against tyranny, against evil, against crushing brutality of the iron fist? Will we stand for freedom? Will we defend democracy? Will we stand together? My answer is yes, and only can be yes.
I'm just amazed at this. My view of history, and I read a lot of history, is out of step with the popular narrative. I don't view Russia as a friend or an ally. I hate communists, and I think you're better dead than red. Loathe communists. For him to, again, we're talking about D-Day. You're talking about World War II. It seems a little bit tone deaf to say this stuff. World War II. And try to compare what's going on in Ukraine to this. Especially one of the bloodiest battles, I got to say, was Stalingrad. One of the bloodiest battles in World War II was Stalingrad. And that's when the Germans realized, oh, it's Napoleon 2.0. Look at us. By the way, that's when urban warfare was really, really kind of kicked off with Stalingrad. The mechanics of that battle, when you couldn't use your heavy artillery, you couldn't use your tanks, it had to be hand to hand, and they knew that. And they fought because they were tired of being rolled across, whether it was by their damn government, their damn commie government that they were mad at, or the Nazis coming in. They were mad. They're just mad and they had it. The history is amazing. But to stand there and say that, D-Day, again, just acknowledge the veterans, acknowledge how amazing it was. Maybe remark on how that's when we were unified. Maybe instead of drawing division, you desiccated old turd, maybe highlight the unity that we had that you insist on driving away now. How everybody came together. You had every good force on earth coming together on those beaches 80 years ago. And not just that, but in America. My gosh, you know, we went above and beyond. If they asked us for 50 ships, we'd send 100. Our manufacturing capability, because we were so bound and determined, we had to do it. No one else could do it for us. We couldn't export it out or import it in. We couldn't outsource the work to China or India at the time. It had to be done in the United States. And we had the know-how, we had the desire, we had the willpower and the manpower and womanpower, those riveters, to do it. And we did it. We did what needed to be done because it needed to be doing. It needed doing. So we did what needed to be done. That was unity. Everybody came together. You had victory gardens. Women changed their hairstyles to even ration supplies. Fashion changed entirely to support the war effort. Everything was in lockstep to defeat evil. Everyone was on the same page. That's what he should be highlighting. But he's divisive trash. So he promotes divisive trash. He should apologize to those veterans. Shame on him. While his son, with one of his baby mamas, sits in court. Speeds.com.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. So first up, a passenger tracked missing luggage to the home of an airport store worker who's now charged with felony theft. A Florida man is facing a felony grand theft charge in Broward County after an airline passenger who was supposed to fly out of Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood in March tracked her stolen luggage to the guy's house, according to the affidavit in the case. Junior Bazil of Fort Lauderdale, 29, was charged. The victim left the airport on a Spirit Airlines flight. The airline canceled the flight, told the passengers they could get their luggage at the terminal. But apparently she waited 2 hours for her pink roller bag. It had her Apple MacBook, her iPad, her Apple Watch, all this other stuff. It never came on the luggage belt. And they said that her luggage had been sent to her house, but it never arrived. And then she had her own electronic tracker. So she pinged the items inside the bag. She located them. She found them, tracked them down, and all of that. And she actually called 911 and went to his house. But here's the other thing. Don't put your stuff in your suitcase. Keep it in your carry-on. What's the matter with you? Stop it. A Delray Beach man is accused of attacking his wife over a child's haircut. He was apparently upset. Drew Wertheimer, 34, was arrested, charged with false imprisonment of an adult, aggravated battery, aggravated assault, with a firearm. Oh, goodness. Tampering with a witness, depriving someone the use of 911. I did not even know that was a charge. He got upset because his children's haircuts were not short like the other ones, one of the kids, and so he just lost his mind. Sounds like he's got problems. It also sounds like maybe she shouldn't have had that many kids with that guy because he's probably not the best. Third hour on the way. Stick with us.
Although no unit, no individual won the war, we're fortunate in having one here tonight with us who had a large part in winning the war. I'm pleased and proud to have been privileged to fight by the side of General George Patton.
Your Honor, the Mayor, General Doolittle, soldiers, ladies and gentlemen, coming over here, there was a very great lesson. In the first 4 hours, we passed over a destroyed land, utterly destroyed. You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top. That's what Germany looks like. That's what Austria looks like. That's what any place that the 8th Air Force and the 3rd Army worked on looks like.
Worked on. Golly. They don't make them like Patton anymore. They really don't. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lashier with you, top of this third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can find us, Channel 347 DirecTV. You can watch us on X and Rumble and YouTube and Facebook, all of that. And we always, as we do, whenever we're on air, when the anniversary of D-Day takes place, we always pause and we talk about the history of it. And I always try to share something new about the history that maybe you didn't know every single year. And I think it's incredibly important to commit to not just remembering, but to keep the memory alive just as it and make it as accessible now and in the future as it was when we had all of our veterans still with us, all of the greatest generation who went over there and did what they did. I've got some pieces up at Substack, Chapter and Verse, the newsletter for the radio show that if you're a subscriber, you got that this morning. We've talked about everything. We talked about the other escapades of the Ghost Army. We talked about Patton, how he was relieved of duty just because he, which maybe I disagree with, because he got mad at some of the cowardice of some of the soldiers, slapped him in front of others. And then before he got his Third Army command of the Third Army back, he was on this optics, this PR tour all across Europe and all around the Mediterranean. And then he also took control of this deceptive unit. The Germans believed all of it because he was involved in it, saved so many lives. And, it's just unbelievable. There's a couple of really good, books about the Ghost Army. I think it's ghostarmy.org. One of the guys who did one of the documentaries on it, they have a website up. They got, they were finally recognized in March of this year for their amazing work. And you had Americans, Brits working together, Ian Fleming orchestrated, like basically wrote the book before James Bond on all of it. That was the James Bond guy. He was involved in a lot of off the book stuff. And also a lot of these missions of subterfuge, for the lack of a better way to put it. But just amazing. It was absolutely amazing. But this is going to be the final year for a lot of these veterans. This is a major milestone moment. And there's this sense, a lot of people have been saying this sense of a final farewell, because there are so few left. And the ones that are there now, they were the youngest ones, and they're in their 90s, you know. It's an amazing thing. And I'm happy that they have these ceremonies, and I hope they continue to have them. And as I said, in March, Congress gave its highest civilian honor to that secretive army unit, the Ghost Army. They got congressional gold medals. And nobody knew really anything about that until the 80s. It's kind of crazy. And then, of course, you know, you had Operation Mincemeat. There was all kinds of crazy operations that they did. That's when they had dropped, a dead body with fake papers about an invasion and all the stuff, plans in Sicily, and the Germans bought it. The Germans bought every trick. Every trick, the Germans bought it. And it's really amazing. It's really, really amazing, all of this. And I'm going to put some links into a separate piece for you on that. I was reading this story last night, and he was part of D-Day. He was a 31-year-old soldier. He was from Britain. He was evacuated from Dunkirk in 1940. He led three mortar teams to attack a German heavy naval artillery position at Mount Fleury. And I was reading about this guy. Listen to this. So he and his men, his name was Stan Hollis, came under fire from a machine gun pillbox hidden in a garden wall just behind the beach there in Normandy. He charged over 30 yards at open ground. He stuck his Sten gun in the slit and emptied the mag. He dropped a grenade in the hole. They caught one remaining German survivor. Then he saw a trench in a second pillbox. And then he ran at that, captured that, and took 30 Germans. And then, at 11 a.m., having taken command of 16th Platoon, Hollis saw an enemy field gun hidden in a hedge and decided that also had to be destroyed. And then he and two Bren machine gunners crawled towards the gun. He was armed with, it's called a PIAT. It was similar to one of our bazookas. He fired a shot and missed. Then he got his two men to retreat and cover in a rhubarb patch. That was attacked by a field gun. Made him mad. Hollis took out another Bren gun, walked out into the open with a heavy machine gun on his hip, and fired directly at the field gun. The field gun took aim at Hollis and missed. And that allowed his men to retreat to safety. He was the only British soldier awarded the Victoria Cross on D-Day. On D-Day. Those are balls. Golly. some of the heroics of, I mean, so many servicemen. I would, I mean, golly, you could do months worth of shows on it. Months worth of shows on it. It's just truly stunning. We have, it was just the partnership and the unity and how everyone worked together. And it was just unbelievable. And the Germans, they were so tricked. They thought when they first saw stuff coming in, they thought, no, that's not the biggest invasion. They thought the big one was coming still at Calais. They were convinced. The deception worked. We saved so many lives. Saved so many lives. Then there was, we could sit here and talk about, gosh, all of the amazing heroics, all of the, some of Josephine Baker, some of the other women that took part that were spies and were helping, if it wasn't the French Resistance and they were helping the U.S. or they were helping the Brits, and just amazing. And because they were nice, pretty women, you know, the Germans didn't think that they were going, this is not going to hurt them. This Fräulein's not going to hurt me. Yes, they will. And they did. Just amazing. I read the story of one woman who killed a dude with her bare hands, like ripped him apart. What was going through her mind, right? Just amazing, amazing stories. Amazing stories. That was really the greatest generation. So much to share because it's the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And we've been talking about all of this, this amazing day of courage and day of reckoning and a lot of losses. There's so many American cemeteries over there. And I'm so heartened when I see photos of how, particularly in the North, the French are just, they revere these people who came and liberated their country. And they didn't want to deal with the Nazis, and they were doing everything that they could, however they could. They had their, you know, the French Resistance that were the most epic troll unit ever conceived. And they were doing everything they could to fight back. And it's when you see the photos of all the cemeteries and the way that the French also take care of them. There's one, some of the cemeteries that are there in Normandy, what they do is they have, I mean, thousands of these graves. These white marble crosses, they go and they take sand from the beach and they rub it on the names of over 3,000 of these crosses every year. And it settles into the, where the names are carved. You can see on the simulcast one showing you. And it just gives them this golden hue. And they do this every year for D-Day. And this is what the French citizens do. They go and they do this every year for D-Day. Every name on every cross. And as you can see, it's not a one and done thing. I mean, they put the sand in, they rub it in, they get the extra sand off, and they make sure everything is covered. Just truly amazing. And it was that teamwork and the appreciation of that teamwork. While this has been happening, you know, we had the president who went over there and spoke, and I think it was a really embarrassing moment. And then it looked like he was crouching down to take a deuce. And my thought was, well, Dark Brandon can drop a deuce where he wants to, I guess. You know, that's part of being Dark Brandon, right? Isn't that, hey, they wanted the meme. The left thought they were going to be funny with the meme. Deuce Brandon drops it where he wants to. Drop it while it's hot, man. Just saying. What was that? What was he? He wasn't even, at first I thought maybe he's trying to reach something on his leg. Nope, he was reaching back behind him. Like he was looking for something to sit down on.
There was a chair there.
No, it was way far behind him. The chair was not right behind him. It was pretty far back. There were no chairs there.
He was trying to sit down before he was supposed to.
It was pretty far back. There,
as he's walking up, you can see the chairs.
It's in the line with all the other guys, though. You see how far back those chairs are?
Yeah, when you watch him actually sit down, the chair is right there. So watch, if this goes all the way through, here he goes. He's about to sit, and she's like, wait, it's not time to sit yet. And then he's like, huh? And then they start sitting. Oh, so the video stops there?
The chair's a little further back, though, from that. Like, they had to step back to sit down there. Someone was saying it was the spatial awareness. People were saying, well, the chair was further back from him than it looks, and he was dealing with spatial awareness, and that's a sign of he's too old and not mentally agile enough to be president. I'm just going to go with he was going to drop a deuce. I'm going with it. That's where we're going. We're going with it. But man, it was just not a good. You know, I will say this: at least he didn't challenge the remaining vets to a fight.
That's a good thing.
He didn't, because he asked one reporter who was asking him questions if he got dropped on his head, and then he challenged another reporter to a fight. At least, you know, he didn't challenge the other vets to a fight. The vets looked shocked. I don't know if you can see some of the faces behind him, but it didn't look too great. It didn't look too good. And then Biden was caught. Lorraine notes that Biden was caught sleeping during the ceremony. How much do you want to bet that he says he was in prayer? You know that man don't pray. Stop it. Or he's going to do what my mom and grandma used to say. I'm resting my eyes. How many of y'all grew up with parents or grandparents who'd be like, I'm going to rest my eyes. And I'm like, that's called sleeping. There's no like eye resting. You don't just, that's sleeping. If you close your eyes and they stay closed, you're sleeping. There's no resting your eyes. But he sat there and then Jill was like leaning into him. And I swear to you, it was like she was trying to like surreptitiously nudge him to where he couldn't see. In the meantime, his son's been in court. Still, oh man, it's such a mess. This is such a mess. So while his mumble mouth marbles dad was speaking, Hunter Biden was in court, and he was, I can't even, I have stories of like what, because he's there with his Insta wife, Insta influencer wife. You got baby mamas, exes, and then they had more stuff about the laptop. You know, the laptop that everyone said was Russian disinformation that's now been confirmed and is, we knew it was from the start. And it's part of the trove of evidence against him. And then Hallie, hang on, Hallie was, I know we got to move. Hallie, that's, was the sister-in-law? Kathleen's the wife. Hallie's the sister-in-law. Now suddenly she can't, Lorraine said she couldn't remember anything when she got on the stand. All of a sudden her memory's so hazy. She's going to rest her eyes.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, little Le'Veon Rose there, Edith Piaf. All right, so no one. And then the Baldwins. Alec and, how do you say her name? That's not her real name. She changed it. She tries, the fake Spanish lady, Hilaria Baldwin. They've decided they're going to do a reality TV series called We Need to Pay Alex's Legal Fees After He Killed a Woman on a Set. That's not what it's called, but that's what it should be called. They're doing a reality show. Is it going to cover his trial? Wow. Is she going to speak English? You know, she's born and raised in Boston and she pretended to be Spanish. How you say cucumber? She actually said that. She was on, remember that? It was like the Today Show and they were trying to cook and she's like a Muppet. How you say cucumber? So when she's not popping out Baldwins, she's faking being Spanish. Anyway, I can't even. Also, the proof that the internet isn't all that great. This is an insane story. So there was this remote Amazon tribe that I don't know why we kept trying to contact them. Leave them alone. They were perfectly fine. Oh no, said society. We gotta make contact. Let's introduce them to not antibiotics, not like, you know, a lighter maybe or some other things that they might need. No, we'll introduce them to the internet. And guess what happened? They all got hooked on porn and social media. And I'm not even making that up. The Brazilian 2,000-member Marubo tribe has been left bitterly divided after Starlink arrived 9 months ago. Now they have the internet. One of the 73-year-old elders told the New York Times, when it arrived, everyone was happy. But now the young people have gotten lazy because of the internet. And they're learning the ways of the white people. I'm sorry that the white people brought porn and social media. We take that one. So, oh my gosh. The society ruins everything. We got more on the way. You don't want to miss. Stick with us.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program, Dana Lash here, bottom of this third hour. D-Day, you're hearing the bagpipes playing Highland Laddie. And insanely, this is a story of how there was he was called the Mad Bagpiper of Sword Beach. And it's because you had the head of Clan Fraser Lord, he was the Scottish Laird, Laird Lovett, who brought with him his own personal bagpiper on D-Day to Sword Beach. It wasn't allowed, as he was told, by the English War Office. But as he told his bagpiper, Bill Millen, he said, ah, we're Scottish. And he wanted his own personal bagpiper to be there on the beach to play the bagpipes to raise morale. And Bill Millen, who was 21 years old, stepped foot on that beach with his dad's World War I kilt and nothing but that and a ceremonial dagger and his bagpipes. That's all he had. And he started out by playing a number of songs. In fact, Lovett had actually screamed at him at one point, ah, play Highland Laddie. Like, he was taking requests. But as bullets were whizzing by and mortars were exploding and other soldiers were being shot, he was walking up and down the sand at Sword Beach very coolly, very calmly, very collected, playing the bagpipes. And as men were coming out of the water and streaming past him to fight the Nazis who were perched in the cliffs, their morale was boosted. Although some of them thought he was nuts. There was apparently a sergeant who was like, get down, you mad bugger. The Germans thought he was crazy. At least that's the rumor. And he survived because they thought he was crazy, and so he might as well not kill him. Because who in the hell else would be walking up and down the beach on D-Day playing bagpipes but a crazy guy? No, it was Bill Mullen. He's a bagpiper. And he said that he was the personal piper to the Laird, and his job was to play the bagpipes for the invasion, going ashore completely unarmed, except for the ceremonial dagger. And Lovett also, there's a couple of stories. There was this story of this, I think it was like a French dentist, when he passed as a young boy, he heard like the bagpipes and the marching, this weird sound coming closer and closer to his village. And he was told the Scots were coming. And that was there. They were coming in to liberate his village. Lovett, if I remember, he was the guy who, after he went in through Normandy, he was, there was one of the bridges, there were two bridges that they had to take command or well hold basically until they were relieved. And they only had days to do it. They were on the clock. And one of the things that has said is that a lot of the soldiers who, a lot of the vets later said that, you know, they were really propelled going because, you know, the Scots, because they heard those bagpipes and they just went for the cliffs. They just went for it. It's pretty amazing. But they were near River Orne. They were up and down the shores of Mirville. They were everywhere. And they were part of, I think, one of the I think one of their missions was one of those bridges that they had to hold until they had been relieved. And Pegasus Bridge, they had to help with the airborne troops, and they had, and it was Pegasus Bridge. And so this is just amazing. And they moved at, they had to move fast. I think they had like 2 days to get it, to get there and get in position. Just an amazing story. But I loved it. He was in the, if you've seen the film The Longest Day, Bill Millen is, his story is part of that. And he used to go to Normandy frequently. He passed away in 2010. But just an amazing, amazing story. And it's, you know, it's not just us. It's the Americans. You had the Canadians. You had the Scots. You had the British. I mean, you had the Aussies. I mean, they were, it's an amazing story of teamwork. But I just love this. I mean, this guy's on the beach walking up and down playing the bagpipes. I mean, can you... You would be like, yes, this is inspiring. I think he's mad, but also I'm very much inspired and motivated now. Right? Just such, so great. Just such a great thing. Simon Fraser, who was the Laird, he was described, Kane, as a bit of an eccentric. That's why he had his own personal bagpiper that he took with him to Sword Beach. But you would have to be a little eccentric, right? Of all the things you're going to take with you. My personal bagpiper, please. And we can do it because we're Scottish. Just funny. I love these stories. I love them. All right. I want to switch gears here because we've been talking about all this other stuff as well. Do I want to get into this? I mean, we just talked about it really. I want to do it. This is a British, it's Ovarian Cancer UK. This is what they tweeted. Quote. Did you know that anyone with ovaries regardless of gender identity, can be at risk for ovarian cancer. Let's raise awareness by asking, can men get ovarian cancer? And then they answer their own question. Anyone with ovaries, regardless of gender identity, can be at risk of ovarian cancer. Additionally, all genders can carry a BRCA gene fault or Lynch syndrome, which would potentially mean their children would be at a higher risk of ovarian cancer. Kane. Get your ovaries checked, dude.
I'm going to call my doctor right now. We should do this live.
Take some balls to go get your ovaries checked.
We should do this live. Call my doctor and set that appointment up.
Just yes, I'm here to get my ovaries checked.
My ovaries looked at. If I could.
I don't know how you would, how that would work.
I don't know.
You should get your pap smear too.
That's
go in and get that pap smeared.
Something I want to pay for.
Oh my gosh. My first thought is you people are morons. And this is not science. My second thought is this is so insufferably disgusting and insulting. Again, it provokes one to violence. You're diminishing cancer, specifically ovarian cancer. And clearly the person who tweeted this has never had to live in fear of their own body turning on them and betraying them. They've never had to live with that fear. They've never had to go to sleep at night knowing that their body was working against them while they slept. They've never had that fear. They've never had to worry about that. They've never had to worry about children, having children, their nothing. Not anyone who has ever had to worry about that would never say something like this. It is such a diminishment. It doesn't do anything to increase awareness. It doesn't do anything to encourage more women to get checked. It doesn't do anything like that. It's cultish virtue signaling. It's not even a virtue. It's sin signaling. It's insufferable. Men do not have ovaries. Thus, they don't get ovary ailments. Men don't have uteruses, and they don't have cervixes, and they don't have ovaries. They don't have any of those things. Women have those things. Don't pretend to be in healthcare or medicine if you can't acknowledge basic biological fact. Stop making everyone try to accommodate your mental illness. Stop trying to force people into validating a mentally ill person's fantasy self-perception. I can't deal with it. I'm done with it. And it's dangerous to women's health to do this. This is dangerous to women's health. It is. And it's completely fair to say that. We got an email the other day. Steve forwarded it over. I'm not going to say the name of the guy or anything like that because he wasn't being a jerk or anything of that sort. But I feel like he's a dad who's torn. Because he wrote and he says, I love your radio show and have been a faithful listener. However, I wish you would leave the gay community criticism out of your show comments. He says, my son is gay and is having a rough time dealing with us. I appreciate your conservative positions, but wish you would leave the moral issues alone. He says, I'm sure you can easily disregard my comments as I'm only one voice, but I wish you would consider this thought. Thank you. Well, clearly, he's also struggling with this as a father, too. I don't know what he means about gay community criticism. What specifically, I'm wondering, is he hinting at? When we talked about the rainbow stuff on everything, because that's a complaint that comes from the gay community. And it's just cringe. You don't need, what does that complete S&P 500 rainbow, all the things have to do with that? And by the way, moral positions are part of my commentary. They always have been. But to talk about the trans issues, I wouldn't constitute that to be part of any community. And I just gave you an example of why it's dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous to have men who cosplay as women and then they demand that the medical community adopt their self-perception and affirm what they see themselves as, their fantasy, affirm that and make that literally a part, try to retcon it and make it a part of science. You see how dangerous this becomes when it starts to affect how care is approached? Now, I think if your child is having a tough time dealing with this, what I'm going to say might be unpopular, and it might be considered tough love, but I look at it like this. First off, it's not my job as a commentator to make you feel better about whatever you're going with your child. There are a lot of other people out there, and if it's an issue of the day, I talk about it. And I have every right to talk about it. I'm a parent, I'm a woman, I'm a mother. I have every right to talk about it, just as anybody else does. But the other thing, too, is raise tougher kids. If you think it's bad that I am actually just merely clinically discussing these issues on air, the world is a scary place, my friend. And you can't shield your children forever. Ships were not made to stay in the harbor. Raise and build tough kids to deal with this stuff. That's how you equip them. That's how you strengthen them. That's where empowerment comes from. It doesn't come from accommodating weakness. Power comes from making someone stronger. Making them react with strength to weakness. So I think that the gentleman who wrote, I think you need to kind of realign your thinking on this. And again, I always joke with people, I'm not Dora the Explorer. I'm not here to raise your kids. We're here to hang out and talk smack and have a nice time and learn some stuff and go through the issues of the day. Build tough kids because we are in hard times.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
We bring you in the studio this morning one of the gay rights activists, Mr. Should I call you Mr.? Pepe Julian Onzima. Thank you for coming in. Good morning. Why are you gay?
Who says I'm gay?
You are gay. How can I describe you?
I'm a human rights defender currently focusing on LGBTI issues. Just for the record, I am not a gay rights activist. I believe there's nothing like gay rights. There is human rights.
Now, we're looking at the raging debate. You're a gay rights activist. Why should someone be gay?
Gay people are born that way. They are born gay. Because you tend to realize yourself as, or find out these changes in you when you're a child.
You are initially male or female?
The sex that was assigned to me at birth was female.
And you opted to become male. Are you dating any female?
Yes, I am.
Doesn't that make you gay?
She's like, what do you mean? Doesn't that make me gay? I'm a man. He goes, but who's gay? Or who is gay? She's like, I'm a male and I'm in a female. I'm in a relationship with another, with a female. And he goes, who is gay? It's funny because he's so deadpanned about it. Right. But also, she's a woman who can't just say she's a lesbian. She's like, no, I'm a man. Even though she isn't really. And she says because she thinks she's a man dating a woman, that means she's not a lesbian or gay. It means she's just a man. And he's like, no. That doesn't work. But that's what she keeps saying. What?
It's so confusing, the guest.
Do they look down? Okay, I'm going to. How do I say this? Is she like looking down and seeing a male copulatory organ that's like a phantom where we don't see it, but she sees it? I don't know. What?
I don't want to and can't.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, clearly you look down and you don't got that, you know? That equipment ain't there. So,
stop being a bigot, Dana.
Well, I mean, I'm just pointing out the what exists in the corporeal world here. You know, I mean, there isn't a weenus there. I don't know how else to put it. Right. So, she's a lesbian, but she insists that she's a male. When you hear some of the trans Tifa talk, they say this stuff. And then someone will ask them, well, did you get like the surgery? they say no. Well, you see, you've got the equipment. And they're like, yeah, but a man will be like, I'm a woman, though. But you never had it removed. No, I'm a ma'am. I'm a woman. And it's just not how that works.
So, excuse me, it's ma'am. It is ma'am.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, that's one of the funniest videos that's on the internet. It's one of the funniest ones. All right. Today in Stupidity, King.
All right. It will have to be Anthony Blinken. Juan, can you play Cut 13? We'll just play some of this. He's trying to compare D-Day to the Ukraine-Russia war.
You know, there's a really powerful parallel, too, between what we're commemorating today and what we're doing now. Back then, it wasn't just the United States. Here in Normandy, 12 countries came together, 160,000 men coming to this beach, coming to start the final fight that ultimately, 11 months later, led to victory in World War II. In Ukraine, yeah, we have more than 50 countries.
Oh, that's not even remotely
the same. Insulting, and especially to those older gentlemen.
They keep talking about division instead of focusing on unity. The 80th anniversary. I don't know if we'll have all those vets with us again next year. The Greatest Generation, if you know one, thank them. God bless you. We'll be back together behind the mic tomorrow.